Welcome into another edition of NBA Sound System. My name is Gil McGregor, and I am joined, as always, by my guy, Kyle Irving. We are a few hours removed from an instant classic. So that being said, KI, how's it going, man?
I mean, I'm ripe with American pride today for the first, I don't know, the last time I would have been able to say that. Although, well, I say it a little bit hesitantly. Not everything went the way that it should have today in today's USA basketball game, but I mean, what more could you ask for? We were waiting forever to watch LeBron James, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant play on the same team. And who better to deliver down the stretch than LeBron James, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant? So still buzzing off the win. That's one of the best basketball games I've watched in a minute. I'm sure you feel the same way. I'm excited to break it all down and excited to break down what we got left in the Olympics.
Yeah, that instant classic I am referring to. The United States men's national team came back from 17 down. They trailed by 17 in the first half, trailed by 13 going into the fourth quarter, and it seemed like they were down and out. But as KI said, LeBron, Steph, KD really stepped up when it mattered most and came back from 13 down to win the game by four in regulation. LeBron had a triple-double, 16 points, 12 boards, 10 assists. Steph Curry, 36 points, hit nine threes. He was 1 point shy of a USA Olympic basketball record and 1 three-pointer shy of a USA Olympic basketball record. And the guy who set the record, Carmelo Anthony, was sitting courtside, and he was in Spike Lee mode. It was so many crazy things going on with that win in the semifinals. Team USA is going to face host country France in the gold medal game, which we'll get to, I'm sure, in a second. But I want to key in a little more on what you said. Three generational talents, LeBron, KD, Steph, each had big moments down the stretch in that fourth quarter. And I saw somebody say it on Twitter. The only person that could have written the script up that perfectly was the basketball gods. And honestly, that's how it felt. It was like a spiritual experience watching that game. It was pretty crazy. So, you know, to say that Team USA needed that to win the game is a conversation in itself, but also that's who they have on in that locker room and on that bench and on that roster. And that's why they put this team together, and they needed every bit of it. Does that make you more or less confident about them needing to just get one more win? The fact that they were tested so much by a Serbia team led by Nikola Jokic, and Bogdan Bogdanovic was talking his talk and having a great game, and Serbia really couldn't miss. But now Team USA kind of came over their toughest test to date and passed.
I don't really think it changes my confidence level in them at all, honestly. Like, I don't know if that's a kind of a weird response or not, but like these games are supposed to be tough. And that's the third time that they've played Serbia. It was weird to me that they played them in the exhibition after knowing that they were going to play them in the group stage. And then like with Nikola Jokic and Bogdan Bogdanovic, and that being, you know, a really strong country that we've played in the gold medal match before, like probably going to see them again at some point in the knockout round. It was strange to me that they scheduled them like that, but you know, that's a tough team, and Jokic is a playmaker. Like, he's impossible to solve defensively. And the United States found that out the hard way, if they didn't already know that from him being a three-time MVP in the NBA. And, you know, guys around him were knocking down shots, and I thought Team USA came out a little bit flat. So that kind of led to Serbia being able to get out to the lead they got to. And, you know, they didn't get the quality minutes they had gotten from guys like Anthony Edwards, guys like Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo. Like, those guys finally didn't have their game. Luckily, Steph Curry was there to save the day with his first big game. Like you said, came up 1 point shy and 1 three-pointer shy of Carmelo Anthony's Team USA records. But, you know, like that's the type of game that like this team is going to rally around that. And they are going to use that as motivation to be more locked in than ever before for that gold medal match against France. They know that they can't come out sleepwalking the way that they did. Sleepwalking is a little bit harsh. It's not like they came out sleepwalking, but they definitely looked a little shell-shocked at how hot Serbia came out. You know, Steph had the Curry flurry going early in the first quarter, but they couldn't get a stop. And you know, that was kind of the story of the entire game all the way up until the fourth quarter. Team USA couldn't get a stop. So, you know, to see them dig in a game that they were trailing by as many as 17 points, they were down 15 going into the fourth quarter, to be able to dig in, get stops on the defensive end, and then just lean heavily on their stars to get the job done. Like, Joel Embiid had struggled all Olympics. He was awesome on the offensive end at the start of that quarter. And then it was, you know, Steph Curry who hit a three, and then LeBron had the transition layup, and then Steph had a steal and a transition layup to swing momentum. And then, like, has the country collectively ever been more sure that a shot was going to go down than that Kevin Durant mid-range jumper that essentially put the game away. And, you know, Melo was telling everybody clear out from the sidelines, like you said, but like that was, you know, that was a really, really, really cool moment to like have that level of confidence of he got the ball at the top of the key. He got the switch that he wanted. And there was no doubt in anybody's mind that he was knocking down that shot. And that ended up being the dagger for USA. So, you know, to be able to overcome a game like that and have their backs against the wall and respond and come away with a win, that's going to make them even more dangerous going into the game against France.
Yeah, one last question for you, because I know we got to face forward, especially just given the fact the nature of this tournament. They're going to play again on Saturday, and this comes out on Friday, so hopefully you hear this before the gold medal game. But one last thought on this semifinal matchup. We mentioned trailing by 17 in the first half, double-digit deficit going into the fourth quarter. Was there a point where you were like, oh, they're done for? This is the Team USA is going to be playing in the third place game. And if there was a point, when was that point?
There was a point, and now I wish I had the box score in front of me because I can't remember his name. One of the shooters was wide open on the right wing for Serbia. And when that ball was mid-flight, USA was down by four. There was like 2.5 minutes left in the game. He was wide, wide, wide open. It felt like him and Avramovic like had not missed a shot all night long. And the shot was in midair, and I'm like, that's going to be the dagger. And it somehow missed. And I think that's when Steph went down and immediately got a three down the other end. So it was like a 6-point swing. But when that ball was in midair, I was like, that's going to be it. That's when they're going to lose. So, you know, that was, it felt like there were several moments where I was like, wow, they're really going to lose this game. But there was kind of like that, like 5% of me that's like, they're not going to lose this game though. They're going to find a way to win. But that one moment, I was like, if this goes down, that might be it for Team USA.
Yeah, for me, there was a few swings like that. One, it was the fast break. I think Team USA could have cut it to 4 or 3, and Drew Holiday had Anthony Edwards cutting for a layup or dunk, and Steph Curry spotting up for 3. Not really a wrong decision either way, but he chose Steph, which was, you know, probably not a bad choice given the fact he hit 9 in the game, but he missed a 3. And I think it was Bogdanovic hit a 3 on the other end. So it was like a 5 or 6 point swing, depending on how you want to look at that, with Team USA not getting the bucket there. And then they clawed back into it in the third quarter, cut it to 5, I think. And then Serbia pushed it back out to double digits. I'm like, oh man, like, they just have answers to every single run and every single thing that Team USA does. Like, there was no doubt in my mind that Team USA is a more talented roster, the better team, but they were just kind of running against time at that point. I was like, they're going to run out of time to get what they need to get done. And I'll point out, they benefited from FIBA rules. Kevin Durant hit that 3. Jokic runs through AD, but instead of AD just getting one free throw as he would in NBA, USA gets the ball back. Devin Booker hits a 3 right then. So essentially, Team USA scored 6 points in 2 seconds, pretty much, because Kevin Durant, if you look at the box score. Yeah, if Kevin Durant, if you look at the box score, I think Kevin Durant hit his 3 at 7:19 and Devin Booker hit his 3 at 7:18. So it's like a 10-2 run to start the fourth quarter, and that really was what swung it around. Now, that being said, they are set to face the host country, France, in the gold medal game. Surprise to a lot of us. I think a lot of us were out on France based on what we saw. They didn't look great during exhibitions, didn't look great during the group play stage, but somehow they beat the team that we thought would be in the gold medal game. France was able to hold Germany off, and it will be France, Team USA, in the gold medal game for the second straight Olympics. This time, there's a young man named Victor Wembanyama in the fold. What are your thoughts about this gold medal matchup between USA and France, especially in front of that Paris crowd and maybe some home cooking that they've been getting throughout the tournament? I'm just saying.
I mean, you and I on the last pod already talked about that 4-point play that, I mean, who knows if they're even standing here. And I'm sure the Canadian fans that are listening to this are waving their fists in the air saying, I was saying the same thing, but like, you know, that kind of set them up for the run that they've gone on ever since. And, you know, I do think that France is going to be an interesting matchup because, so you had the Canada game, right, where it was a complete surprise that Rudy Gobert hardly played. I think he played like 3 minutes and 40 seconds or something like that. That's a complete surprise. They were not game planning for that. So scrap the game plan, got to kind of go impromptu. I'm not saying that Canada still shouldn't have won that game. I do think they still should have won that game, but I do think that, you know, the way that France started that game, all the energy that they had and the way they got out to a big lead, and it felt like Canada was really playing from behind the entire game, like that set the tone and set the momentum from the game. So shout out to head coach Vincent Collet for that from France. But then like with Germany, so afterwards it comes out that, you know, Rudy Gobert may or may not have had finger surgery. There was kind of mixed reporting on that. He said he had finger surgery. The head coach said he did not, said it was just a sprain or whatever it was. But, you know, the thought is, okay, well, he was injured. Maybe he's going to get back into the rotation or back into the starting lineup, you know, for the semifinals against Germany. And then not only was he not in the starting lineup, he only played 5 minutes the entire game. So again, like if they were going into that game thinking, all right, he was just hurt, he had a finger injury, he's going to be back into the rotation for this game, like that could also throw off your game plan. Now, listen, you and I aren't in the locker rooms. We're not in the coaches' meetings. We have no idea if they were game planning for Rudy Gobert or not. All we can do is speculate. But I'm saying that like now that the United States have seen this version of France, and clearly they have found something, you know, going to a more mobile and more versatile lineup, moving Wemby to the five. They're really leaning on Lessort, who's been a monster on the offensive glass, monster on the defensive glass, as their bigs. And really, Rudy's just out of the rotation. Like, the United States can game plan for that now. And again, like, with the momentum they're carrying over from having their backs against the wall against Serbia, I don't know how you feel. I would be absolutely shocked if the United States, after that win, doesn't go on to take home the gold. I'm going to bounce it back to you and ask you, what percent chance do you think that France has to win the gold medal?
First thing that came to mind is 27, because Rudy Gobert wears a weird number and it's 27, but I'm going to go a little bit lower than that. I think I'm going to go like 18-19%, which I guess like gives like Team USA, I chose a random figure, but I think I give Team USA a 4 out of 5 chance. If you play that game 5 times, Team USA wins it 4. I do think that, you know, that home court advantage is very real, and that's like, you know, ref BS aside, because like ultimately players make plays and win the game. I just think that, you know, France has got a little bit of magic going with them. We saw it against Germany. We saw it against Canada as well. Canada came out flat, and I know we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show. But these guys are making plays. You know, Isaiah Cordonnier, Evan Fournier is tapping back into, you know, who we knew him as being with the Nuggets. He's like looking like Nuggets Evan Fournier. and Victor Wembanyama, really, it's funny, you know, isn't really shooting the ball well at all. Like looking at his splits and his numbers, but you know, his presence out there, you know, him just being a magnetic figure and being somebody, you know, kind of the face of the program, the face of French basketball, and they're kind of rallying behind him. But like you mentioned, a lot of these guys who aren't in the NBA right now, Yabusele, Cordonnier, Lessor, like all these guys are stepping up. And I think that kind of similar to what we say in the NBA playoffs, where role players play better at home, these dudes are balling out because they're playing at home. And I think that that does give you a little extra effort. And I know that, like in the past, like, you know, the rest of the world has caught up, or they are catching up to Team USA. And the gold medal game has always been the toughest game. I think back to Spain in 08. I think back, you know, to Serbia in 2016 and 2020/2021 against the same France team or the same France program. So it's going to be a tough one. And I think that, you know, you toss it up 4 times, 5 times, the USA wins 4 of them. But I'm pretty confident, especially now that they've been tested to the limit already in this tournament. I don't think that'll happen in back-to-back games.
I was scrolling through my phone real quick as you were talking, and fans of Team Canada, please close your ears. But John Hollinger had tweeted it out after the France game today. Isaiah Cordonnier had 3 games of 18 or more points in the EuroLeague this past season. He scored 25 against Canada. He had 18 today against Germany. So, you know, this is a player who is more so known for his energy and his defense. The shot's a little streaky. He was shooting under 30% from three, I saw today when I was looking at his stats, because I was kind of wondering, I'm like, he's got NBA size. He moves pretty well. He defends at a high level. I'm like, could this guy maybe get another shot with the way that he's playing, you know, in the Olympics? But, you know, it goes to show that, kind of like you were saying, like that crowd is behind them. And I really felt like that was sort of what catalyzed them to, because that was a, you know, back and forth game. Like it was like punch counter punch all game for the first 3 quarters. And then the fourth quarter came around and it really felt like, you know, France just had a little bit more energy with that home crowd behind them. And it's going to be absolutely rocking in that arena against the United States. And, you know, they're going to need their role players to step up, because if Rudy's not in the rotation, and like you said, Wemby has not been what they need him to be offensively. He's obviously still going to work on lobs and layups and, you know, on the offensive glass, things like that, you know, just throwing down dunks because nobody's big enough to stop him and contest him at the rim. But like, you know, he has not been shooting the ball well, and they've been leaning heavily on Cordonnier. They've been leaning heavily on Fournier. You know, Gershon Yabusele, I have to mention him because former Celtic, he has been awesome for them as a scorer, you know, kind of taking over as that number 2 option behind Victor Wembanyama. And I'm sure that's going to be one of the, you know, key game plans for the United States is, all right, like, who are we going to put on him and how are we going to shut out his offense? Cause he's been so productive for them, but you know, they're going to need help from the other guys because obviously the United States is deep and they're going to have multiple guys that are contributing. And this was really the first game that Team USA didn't have a bunch of guys scoring in double figures. It was really only like LeBron and KD and LeBron and Steph and Joel Embiid. So, you know, France is going to need a little bit from everybody and, you know, their role player is going to have to get the job done at quote unquote home because that, you know, crowd's going to be rocking.
Yeah. One weird quick shout out, Kenny Atkinson on that France bench, new head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Kind of weird to see him on that bench, but he has been with them. That being said, another thing I was going to say is really cool. LeBron James, Anthony Edwards, Anthony Davis, and Victor Wembanyama, four number one overall picks spanning from 2003 to 2023 will be taking place in the gold medal game. Before we take it to a break, putting you on the spot, what is your prediction, maybe even a final score or a point differential for the gold medal game?
Damn, I kind of wish I looked up the Vegas odds before this, but I did not. I'm going to guess off the top of my head that the United States are probably like 10.5 point favorites is what I'm going to guess. Maybe 11 point favorites. Cause they were 16 today. I think it went down to 15 before tip off. I was curious about that. But you know, with the way that France has been playing so well and the way that, you know, Serbia kind of humanized Team USA, I'm going to guess that, you know, I'm actually going to change that answer. I think United States wins by 12. United States wins the gold medal game by 12 points. That's what I'm going to give you.
I like that. I like that. I think it'll be one of those like a 13, 14 point game that's close throughout and they pull away late. You get a Steph Curry dagger. You get a LeBron James and one with the shrug flex. And that's just kind of how Team USA pulls away. But I just think that France is talented enough and have the backing to stay around.
I just looked it up. It's 16.5 again. So it's actually again the same spread against Serbia. So today's result did not move the needle at all for the United States. Against France. They're 16.5 point favorites against France in the gold medal match.
There you go. So for those of you who are into that sort of thing, Vegas usually knows, even though they didn't know in the Serbia game. I said the big thing, Team USA cannot afford to have a slow start. Again, it's the gold medal game. France is going to be on fire. And that's exactly what they did a bit against Canada. That's a perfect segue to a quick break. We will talk about Canada basketball a little more and what's next for the program after losing in the quarterfinals to France. All right, so Canada entered this tournament with high aspirations, high hopes, and a very talented roster, and they came up a little short, lost by 9 points to France, who we've been waxing poetically about throughout this show. And we talked about it a little bit. It was a slow start from Canada, and they really just couldn't overcome it. It was, more NBA talent on that Canada roster, but France had the role player stepping up and the advantage on the interior. But really, it was more about the role player stepping up in that game. Now, Canada's kind of back to square one. 24 years to get back to the Olympic stage. No medal to show for it, but I wouldn't necessarily consider the 2024 Olympic appearance as a failure, just more of a letdown. But I guess the question now is, what is next? And what is next for the program kind of entails. You know, it's not just, let's fast forward to the Olympics in 2028. There's a national team program aspect of it. There is the winter core guys who will play in these qualifying tournaments. There is, you know, FIBA Americas. There is the World Cup in 2027. I think what I'm thinking about is, you know, retaining some of the guys from this roster, but also what you would like to see added to the roster. There's some young guys coming up the pipeline who we will probably see in red and white in the coming years. So where do we even start with what's next for the program?
Well, I think what's next is kind of like a frustrating conversation for, you know, Canadians who have been following this team very closely. And I say that, you know, because you and I work with our colleague Carlin Gay, who has been following the program as close as anybody over the last couple of years. And even just from people that we follow on Twitter, just in our network, like it felt like the reaction was the same across the board of like anytime that someone was bringing up like, oh, but like 2028, and everyone's like, I don't want to hear about 20, like Carlin specifically said, he's like, I don't want to hear about 2028 right now. Like 2024 was supposed to be the year. And I think that's what's so frustrating is that like you finally got almost a completely whole team. Like Wiggy wasn't there, Zach Edey wasn't there, some of the other guys, Benedict Mathurin, Shaden Sharp, a little bit too young to, you know, kind of be ready to play for them right now. But you know, like they had high expectations for this team, higher expectations in the finish, especially with how good they looked through the first part of that tournament. You and I talked about RJ Barrett extensively in our last pod. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander proves once again that he is just one of the most unguardable players on the planet. You know, they obviously did not get the production that they needed from Jamal Murray. That is the biggest question mark. Like, what is really going on with him? Because, you know, I don't know if he just didn't fit in or he didn't really feel out his role with this team or whatever it was, but he could never get going. Dylan Brooks didn't show up in a big game. Like, and there's the story of the game right there. So, you know, when they're looking forward to 2027, 2028, FIBA World Cup and the Olympics, I think, like you said, the biggest thing is going to be like the roster turnaround. Like, there are a lot of guys on this roster that have been on this team and represented Canada at a lot of major tournaments, you know, that aren't going to be on the team again next year. And for the next Olympics. And I think, like, you know, I just mentioned two players that I personally am really excited to see play on the major tournament, FIBA stage, Olympic stage, and that is Shaedon Sharpe and Benedict Mathurin. I do think that Canada could have used their scoring juice a little bit, and I'm really, 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 really high on Shaedon Sharpe. Like, I think that if he gets the opportunity that he should with the Trailblazers this year, like, he is, you know, knocking on the door of a breakout season. I think he's extremely talented, and I think he hasn't even scratched the surface of his potential. So I get really excited about what he might look like in 4 years when Canada is competing in the Olympics in Los Angeles. So, you know, there are greener pastures for Team Canada. Like, you know, basketball is a big deal there now. The grassroots programs and everything like that are bubbling up talent left and right. They have the second most amount of NBA players in the league outside of the United States. So there's going to be plenty of a talent pool to pick from. It's just trying to assemble the right roster around Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, around RJ Barrett, around Jamal Murray, you would think, you know, as long as he can find his footing and bring it, you know, you and I were talking about this before, and I'll let you go off on it a little bit more, but like, front court is most important. Like, front court is where they were lacking the most. So even though they're going to bring in Sharpe and Mathurin, guys who are extremely exciting, guys who can score the ball, guys who can hopefully defend multiple positions on the wing, like, they're going to have to really shore up that front court. We know Zach Edey should be one of those guys. I expect him to be one of those guys because, again, I talked about it before, I'm high on Edey as well. I think that he's going to end up finding his footing in the NBA quicker than people expect. But who are going to be the other bigs on that roster? Because, honestly, Dwight Powell, probably not going to be there. Kelly Olynyk, probably not going to be there. Melvin Ejim, probably not going to be there. Ken Birch, probably not going to be there. So, you know, there's going to have to be some sort of foundation of big men that Canada is going to have to find if they're going to compete at the highest level against these other countries.
Before I address the front court thing, I'm kind of thinking about what you were saying, the way you said it. Was I being too kind in saying that it wasn't a disappointment and just calling it a letdown? Should I say that it's a disappointment? I think maybe I'm letting the program off a little bit easy, and that's not how you make the leaps that you're supposed to make. If you're saying, "Oh, it's a disappointment," like, be kind. They'll be back here in a few years. Maybe it was a disappointment. They should have done better. They should have done more. Like, losing when they lost is unacceptable, because if you want to reach the heights that this program wants to reach, you know what? Like, losing in the quarterfinals and not having a chance to medal is unacceptable.
I'm not going to speak for the country that I'm not a part of, and I can't say it with my chest the way I would have said it with my chest if the United States had lost today and called it a disappointment. Yeah. But, like, let's call a spade a spade. It's a disappointment. That's a team that was supposed to be in the gold medal game against the United States, and they had beaten the United States in the bronze medal game at the FIBA World Cup. Like, that was the expectation. And I'm not saying that it's gold medal or bust. Like, that's not the case. But, like, podium finish is what the expectation was for that team, and they fell well short of that. So I don't know how you call it anything other than a disappointment.
Yeah, and I had this conversation. I was doing a radio spot in Canada last week, and they were asking me pretty much the same thing. Like, is it gold or bust? Is it medal or bust? And even if it isn't, right, like, you shoot for the moon, and if you kind of come up short, you land in the stars. And I just guess that losing in the quarterfinals, and it's admirable to get out of the round that they got out of. And they did pick a bad day to have a bad day. They had their worst possible game in the biggest possible moment. And I think kind of what I said about this gold medal game between France and the USA, you play that game 10 times, Canada might win it 6 or 7 times, but they had the performance that they could not afford to have in that moment. And I think that, you know, if Team USA is the gold standard as far as basketball goes, you kind of look at what they were able to do in that comeback and digging deep. And that's when it kind of comes back to what you were saying and getting a Shaedon Sharpe. And he is able to develop the way that he's expected to develop and grow over the next 3 or 4 years, that by that next Olympic cycle, World Cup cycle, that's borderline star power. That is star power on the team. Like, he could very well, like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he is an all-star or a fringe all-star in 3 or 4 years. Same goes for Benedict Mathurin. Like, it's funny, we don't really talk about the fact that he wasn't around for this Pacers team during their playoff run, but these are two guys who could be all-stars, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I fully expect, you know, be 29, 30 years old around this time, will probably be in the prime of his career, which is crazy to think he could be even better than he is right now. So you could be led by an MVP, some fringe all-star guys, and then hopefully Jamal Murray bounces back, and he's playing at an all-star level as well. There will be no other countries outside of the United States, maybe France at that point in time, that has that much all-star level talent. So, yeah, like winning this year would have been a good opportunity to build on that. But at the same time, you can look at it and dig deep from this letdown and kind of use that as a different type of motivation or fuel. That being said, Zach Edey, front court, where do you go from there? You know, Leonard Miller isn't necessarily a traditional big, but he does have size. Can he be comfortable playing spot minutes at a big position and learn how to do that? Will he grow into the role that he has with Minnesota over time? I think that's a great opportunity for him in player development there. Charles Bediako does have size, was impactful at the NCAA level. Another name to throw out there, he's a little bit older considering he's a college guy, but Fardal Zamak is another guy who is a big guy with size, you know, had put up numbers at the collegiate level at all different stops that he had, is going to be a fringe NBA guy, or seems like he's a fringe NBA guy right now. So, you know, considering the fact, like you mentioned, Kelly, he'll be 36, 37. Trey Lyles will be in his early 30s. Ken Burch will be 35. Might not go to them. Maybe just go to one of those three guys. I don't know. Same thing goes to Dwight Powell, who'll be in his mid-30s as well. So if you're able to bring some of those young guys up, get legitimate star power as upgrades on the wing, ultimately, you kind of be in that position where talent just overcomes shortcomings otherwise, because when you have NBA players, as we see with Team USA and as we saw with Team Canada, you have the luxury of having a lot of talent, but then you also working against time, because you just realistically can't have these guys together that much to prepare for these tournaments. So I think the strength of the program will be how much you can get these guys to play together in the World Cup and in these other different windows, so they're comfortable playing with one another and they're ready to go at these tournaments. But ultimately, disappointment in 2024, but encouragement for what's coming in 3 or 4 years. I can say this with certainty. It won't be another 24 years before Canada's playing the Olympics. It took 24 years from 2000 to 2024, but we're in the golden age. Minor setback, they will come back.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, another name that I want to throw in the ring in terms of front court is Brandon Clark. Like, that's someone who, you know, he's kind of had a weird NBA career to this point. Like, he was, you know, a pretty key member of the Grizzlies in his first and second year. And then he kind of fell out of the rotation a little bit, and injuries kind of caught up to him. And I don't know for sure, actually, but I would assume since he was out for the majority of this season that injury was the reason that he wasn't even in the pool of players for training camp. Yep. But, you know, he's another name of a guy who, you know, at that point, he's going to be probably like, I mean, I don't know, he's around our age. So he's probably going to be around like 32, 33 by the time the next Olympics comes around. So, he's another player who he brings length, athleticism. He's mobile. The FIBA game should serve him well. I'm not that familiar with like the crop of high school players that are coming up out of Canada. I'm sure there is somebody that is listening right now that is like, hey, they're not naming this kid, but like, you know, for all we know, there's an 18
Olivier Rieu, right? 7'8".
I thought about Olivier Rieu, but we got to see what his development looks like. He's the only big that I could have, you know, from the grassroots, like that I could have, you know, brought up, and I wasn't just going to name drop him because it's the only name I knew. But, you know, I'm sure there are people that are sitting there going, oh, this kid in high school is really, really good, and he's coming up through the pipeline. And like, that's exactly what Canada needs. They need some like younger, more athletic, kind of like fresh bigs that they can kind of bring into this program, because they are completely good on the perimeter. They are covered on the perimeter. They have scorers. They have wings that can defend. They have guys who can handle the rock. Like, the trenches, the front court is where they need to shore up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, to your point, I looked it up. Brandon Clark will be 31 going into 32 summer 2028. And another name I could throw out there to play some small ball four, small ball five. We've seen him do it. O'Shea Brissett is another guy who, you know, is at training camp this year. And again, like, you don't want to have major minutes, but, you know, again, like we were saying, or like I said to you before we're on the record, is just that, you know, you can't ask Zach Edey to play 32 minutes, even if he's, you know, 25, 26 years old. Get 25, 26 minutes out of him in the FIBA game, and then spot minutes otherwise, I think that'll be good, and that'll be another big step. Because, again, he's another guy. I didn't even count him. He's a guy who could be, you know, a fringe all-star at that point in his career. Like, who knows how his development will take out, especially playing with those guys in Memphis. I want a quick note. I will say it was a little bit of a disappointment, let down for the women's team. They ended up going 0-3 in group play, weren't able to make it out. don't necessarily think that it's the end of an era, you know, as far as Dalia Chamwa being the captain and this being the last time, but, you know, saw some good things from Bridget Carlton. I know Kia Nurse will be back and Scylla Swords. Really awesome to see. She hasn't even stepped on college campus yet. She's going to be at University of Michigan next year and was able to play Olympic basketball. And like, that's going to do so much for her confidence this upcoming season in the Big Ten, but also 4 years from now. Obviously, if you go at 18, you're going to go back at 22, and she has a younger sister coming up the pipeline as well. So I saw somebody point this out on Twitter, what we're seeing with Germany and the Wagner brothers, we could see with the Sword sisters in Canada women's basketball. So that should be an exciting prospect for women's basketball on the Canada side. After a little bit of a letdown, I'm sure they will bounce back for sure. As we wrap up here, we were given a gift, and that was a pun that I didn't even intend to make, but we were given a gift right before we recorded. We learned the Christmas Day schedule for the 2024-25 season. I'm going to run through it real quick, and Kat, you can tell me which game you are most excited for and why. Open up with the Christmas Day matinee at MSG, and that is Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs at Madison Square Garden, take on the Knicks, followed by Conference Finals rematch between the Timberwolves and the Mavs, then Sixers Celtics at TD Garden. The champs always play on Christmas. Lakers, Warriors, and then to close it out, the game that a lot of people usually fall asleep on unless you're on the West Coast and you're really tuned in, Nuggets, Suns from the Footprint Center. I think that's what they're calling it these days. And that's what they're still calling it these days. So five-game slate. I think I know what you're going to say, but you go ahead and say it anyway.
Nah, you don't know what I'm going to say, because I'm actually going to give, like, it's not an old man yells at cloud rant, but I'm kind of like, can we get a little creative with the Christmas Day schedule? Like,
switch it up.
We got Celtics 76ers. We got Warriors Lakers. We had Denver in Phoenix last year, didn't we? Or was that 2 years ago?
Year or two. It's one of the past 2 years we got.
I think it was 2 years ago. But
yeah, that was when Aaron Gordon dunked on Landry Shamet and got a chain of it.
Dunk of the year, pretty much. That was a dunk of the year candidate. Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, I there's part of me that's like, I kind of wish they switched the matchups up a little bit. I mean, obviously, I'm always going to look forward to sitting down on the couch, me and my dad, my brother, watching Lakers Warriors, but watching Celtics 76ers. But I am actually most excited to watch Victor Wembanyama's Christmas Day debut. I mean, he's going into Madison Square Garden. And, you know, we saw Giannis make his Christmas Day debut at Madison Square Garden, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, sounds right.
It's really cool to see big-time stars like that play at the Mecca on Christmas Day. So that's, you know, it's the first game of the day. It's sometimes the toughest game to catch because, you know, you're doing meet and greets with your family. Yeah, you haven't even had a chance to settle in on the couch yet. You're still, you know, doing hey, how are yous and everything like that. But, you know, you might want to get the hey, how are yous out of the way a little bit earlier so that way you can settle in on the couch at noon and tap into Wemby at Madison Square Garden, because other than that, you're going to see a bunch of games you've already seen before.
That's a fair point. And it's funny because last year, a lot was made of Wemby's first game at MSG. And he wasn't great. Like, he's a rookie, and I think that was at the point in time where he was still figuring things out. I think, like, he was still, obviously, we could tell how special he was from the moment he first stepped on the court. But earlier in the year, it wasn't like he was turning our heads every time he did something. And one of those games that were a little bit rougher where he looked like a rookie was at MSG. So this is an opportunity for him to have his first big MSG game, Christmas debut. Everybody's going to be tuned in. And I will also say confidently that this ain't the last time he's going to be playing on Christmas. I mean, a lot of those games might be taking place in San Antonio moving forward. So that's going to be a good one. I'm going to go with the Western Conference Finals rematch. Who knows, you know, what it's going to look like by the time we get there. Dallas has improved this offseason with the moves they've made. It's going to be Klay Thompson going against the Timberwolves on Christmas Day. So thinking about that as well. So that'll be fun, especially the way Luka was really letting Minnesota know what he was doing to them during that conference final, especially during that closeout game. I think it was what, like 17-20 in the first quarter he had in that game. So it'll be fun to watch those two teams go at it. But it is funny you pointed that out. Like, I think back, you know, Philly Boston feels like the games kind of blend in. I think about the Kyrie Dagger game, which has been a while now, but that was a Philly Boston Christmas Day game. Lakers Warriors game, unfortunate Christmas Day memory, but LeBron's first season when he got injured, that was on Christmas Day against, and like you said, you know, Aaron Gordon and Landry Shamet, that was a Christmas Day game as well. So yeah, maybe we can switch it up a little bit. I don't know. if there was one team that you would like to see or one player that you'd like to see on Christmas Day instead of those mainstays, I understand why we hadn't had those teams play on Christmas, but I don't know if there's anybody else you'd want to fold in there to mix it up a little bit.
Man, there's no one that's coming to my mind right away, but as you're saying Orlando? That out loud, there's Orlando would have been fun. I don't know if they're drawing people away from the dinner table to the TV, so I kind of understand where the NBA is coming from there. But, you know, I will say that as you're saying that out loud, though, there is like a large part of me that's like, you know what, let's get these Steph Curry versus LeBron matchups in while we can. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit on what I just said. I'm going to backpedaling faster than a defensive OKC. Back right now. OKC is OKC. Yes.
We should have
Oklahoma
OKC.
City. We should have been watching Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on Christmas. All right, that is my pick. You spoke it into existence for me. But like I was saying, you know, I'm backpedaling like a you know, all pro defensive back right now because give me all the LeBron and Steph matchups that we can get. But you know, they could have changed up the other matchups. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I like that. Yeah, OKC would have been a fun one, especially the fact that they got better this offseason. And I'm excited to see. I guess this means we're one step closer to schedule release, and then I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that on here, especially games that we're excited to watch during the upcoming season. But it's going to be fun to see like how many national television games like Thunder get, just because they are a really fun team and they got a lot of star power, and they're only going to get better as time moves on.
And I feel like this is a sign of things to come. Like if Wemby's getting Christmas Day, like, I mean, the Spurs weren't on national TV that much last year. So this is true. I think this is the first sign that we're turning the corner and we might see San Antonio on national TV like 18 times next year or something like that.
You know, last one I'll say, you can't fit it in. Maybe if there was like a different thing, and I know that the NBA coverage is changing soon and we're going to have Black Friday games and stuff. That being said, Indiana, Milwaukee would have been a fun one to have. The rivalry there, maybe, yep. You know, somebody could give somebody a basketball as a Christmas gift. That'd be a pretty good subplot storyline. But yeah, and I do think you saying that, I think we'll get some Chet Wemby games on Christmas down the line. This year wasn't the year. Maybe introduce one at a time. But I am interested. It is surprising to see that we won't have Giannis on Christmas this year. Maybe they're just worried about the health of that franchise and that team's a little bit older. So we will see how that goes. Hope you enjoyed this edition of NBA Sound System. Hopefully you take heed to our predictions for the gold medal game. I think Kyle and I are in lockstep saying that Team USA will take home a fifth consecutive gold medal, as the women's team is still in pursuit of an eighth consecutive Olympic gold medal, which doesn't even sound right when I say it. That being said, we will be back here to debrief and talk a little bit more about the Olympics as we know who wins the gold, and then we will spin it forward as the NBA season, I'm sure, will be here before we know it. Kyle's talking about backpedaling like a cornerback. The NFL is here. I don't think that our teams are playing one another, and I don't think mine has scored yet. So it's going to be a rough year to be a Panthers fan, and it'll be a little less rough to be a Patriots fan this year. You'll hear more about that throughout the year on NBA Sound System as well. So please make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and like the podcast. Easiest way to support us and share it with a friend. That's also support as well. For Kyle Irving, my name is Gil McGregor. Thanks for tuning in to this week's NBA Sound System. We will catch you back here same time next week.